A little theme music for today. So today we are talking about single. Well, I told my wife it was going to be funny when I came out. I didn't mean that. Now you know why I was single through high school. So yeah, if there was anyone to talk about singleness, it would be me. You know, because we've been talking about marriage and, you know, what does it mean to be a good, you know, husband? What does it mean to be a good wife? And what does it mean to picture this thing that Jesus has created for us? That Jesus and the church, there's this union, there's this love, this sacrifice that's going on, and that as marriage we're supposed to picture that. Well, we're looking at singleness today, and this is a pretty good picture for that. All through this sermon series, we've been looking at different family photos. And so today for singleness, as we ask the question, you know, what does it mean to be single? You know, what does it mean to be single for God? You know, single in light of this concept of marriage. And, you know, this is pretty good representation of what it means to be single. I don't know if you can see it as well. Let me move, make sure we're here. Because you got the fro going, you know, the full beard. You know, the jacket's pretty sweet. You know, that is a pretty good embodiment for the single dude. Maybe an updated version. I don't know when this was, like 60s or 70s. This is hopefully done in the 60s or 70s. That'd be the only excuse to dress like this. But maybe, you know, today, you know, the idea of singleness is probably, you know, more of a really intense nerd where you're really into, say, Star Wars or Star Trek or Battlestar Galactica or something that's, you know, extremely nerdy. It puts you in a very specific type of class. That maybe that would be the representation of, oh yeah, that's a single guy, you know. But we also see singleness in the culture. There's been a couple movies that came out last couple years. No Strings Attached was one of them. I've told you before, I'm a rom-com fan, so if I use those examples, you have to bear with me. But No Strings Attached it was a movie that came out just about a year ago, and the idea was that these two people would enter into a relationship where all they would do, basically Friends with Benefits, which I think was another movie that came out the same year, all they would do is just have sex. They wouldn't have a real relationship. There'd be no relationship outside of the bedroom. It was just all about the bedroom. And what happens through this movie is one party gets invested. You know, one party can't just leave it in the bedroom. And so they get invested and they want to have a real relationship, and they're living and desiring and seeking this type of relationship, this interdependency, where the other person is very independent. They don't want to have that connection. They don't want to have that. They're pushing against everything. They want to keep their life organized and structured. And when you see this, the way these two people react to the situation, what we're really seeing is basically the two idols that are laid out. What is singleness? You know, well, some people for singleness, it's a glorious thing. It's a time to live your life for yourself. It's a time to be very independent. For other people, singleness is it's a curse. It's terrible. It is a burden. It weighs on their soul every day they wake up, and they don't have another person to connect to. And so people typically, I mean, I don't want to put anyone in a box here, but typically the male will be a bit more independent, and the woman will be a bit more interdependent, seeking that connection. That's been the traditional categories, although in No Strings Attached, it's flipped. The woman is very independent, doesn't want to have a relationship, where the man is very independent. Maybe we're going through a shift there in our culture. But we do see that those are kind of the ways people will approach singleness. And then really, there's three attitudes towards singleness that you can have. These three things, you can use this for anything. You can use this for pretty much how you view or relate to any opportunity, any situation that you're in. You can either view it as God, gross, or gift. Basically, your situation, your opportunity, do I view singleness as God? Do I view singleness as the greatest thing that's ever happened to me? Because I'm single, I am free, there are no strings attached, I am able to I'm able to play video games to my heart's content. I'm able to stay up late and go watch movies with my friends whenever I want. I've got no burdens. I'm not waking up in the middle of the night feeding a baby. I'm not having to check in with a significant other. I don't have to call my spouse and say, hey, I'm going to be out late or coordinate schedule. There's none of that. I am completely my own man. I'm completely independent. And so a view like this would view singleness as God. Singleness is so great. Because I can do whatever I want. There's no burdens. There's nothing weighing me down. The other way to view it, though, is some people view singleness as gross or a curse. You know, you view, okay, I'm in this situation. I am single. I need another person. There's a longing. There's a desire to be connected with another person, to have that relationship. And so it'll be this burden that people deal with every single day. And they'll say, oh, no, this is a curse. This is terrible. This is an awful situation. And then lastly, what I'm hoping to present to you and hoping to show you today is that really what we should view singleness as, if you're in this situation, if you're single, that it's really a gift from God. And that might sound crazy to the people who view it as gross. That might sound okay for the people who view it as God. But hopefully I'm going to try to balance the two there and show you that it's not an idol. It's not something that we should worship, being single. It's not something we should take to far extremes. It's not something that's a curse. It's not something that should weigh us down. But it's something that God has given us for a specific purpose, probably for a specific time. Because there's two different ways God will give the gift of singleness. He'll give the gift of singleness as a light, like for Paul. Paul wrote the book we're going to read today. He wrote Ephesians, which is the book we've been in for a long time. Paul wrote a lot of the New Testament, and he was a single dude. Jesus was a single guy. And so we have these leaders who, in the Christianity, have did amazing things, and they used the gift of singleness to help them accomplish certain ministry goals. And so singleness can be a gift that was used by that God has for a specific purpose. It's something that God has given you a unique opportunity, a unique ability to do things. And for some people, that is a lifetime call. Now, if you play the percentages right, even though maybe you're, in your mid-20s or wherever you're at in life, and you're like, okay, I had a friend growing up in college, and in college, the religion majors get married really young for some reason. I don't know if we're just trying to obey, like, the be fruitful and multiply or what. I don't know. There's something that influences the religion majors to get married at young ages. And I got married at 21. My wife was 20, so even if we had alcohol at the wedding, which we didn't, but even if we did, there was no point because she couldn't drink. So we get married really young, but my friend, he all his friends are getting married off, you know? And it was such a burden for him. I mean, we would talk, and he would just talk about his singleness. And he moved away from the city, and he moved to a small town. And there was a burden that was on him because he was all his friends were getting married off, and he felt a hole, this void that he desperately wanted to be filled. And I remember a year before he got married, he was at one of his lowest points, and then a year later, he's married. Has an unbelievable relationship, has a kid that he loves and enjoys to spend time with, and now, but just a year before that, it was just the weight of the world just crushing him. But for him, singleness was a seasonal call, and that's for most of you guys. If you're single, if you're in high school, you're thinking, okay, I'm single because what am I going to do, get married at 16 and, go to a job? No, you've got a lot of life ahead of you. Some of you are going to go to college, some of you go to trade school. Some of you are going to go on and pursue different pursuits until you get married. And so you'll be single for a while. You'll be single for a season. Some of you, if you recently out of a divorced relationship, maybe you're recently out of a bad breakup and you're thinking, well, am I going to be single forever? Well, chances are probably not. If you look at just the statistics, people get married. People find one another. And so there is a calling that is seasonal. There is a seasonal calling for singleness. And so that's where most of us are going to be at. If you're wondering, am I called for a season? Am I just trying to prepare myself? If you're wondering, is that what I'm called to? Or am I called to a lifetime? Well, there's a real quick gauge I'm going to give you. Basically, if you are desiring another partner, you're probably not called to singleness. If you're for a guy, if you struggle with, if you cannot have a computer in your room without sinning, you're not called to singleness. Okay, you might prefer singleness and you might prefer that lifestyle, but that's not a calling. Okay, if there's a desire in you to be with a woman, you're not called to singleness. For a woman, if there's a desire into you to connect with someone, to have someone there, to be able to pour your life into them and see, that is a calling to marry, to being married, not a calling to singleness. So I want us just to kind of realize most of us are probably called, if we're in a single state of life, most of us are probably called to a seasonal being, you know, seasonal singleness. If you're, you know, young and you've got your Facebook status and you've got some, you know, status symbol that says in a relationship, but you're like, you know, 16 and you can't drive, you're single, okay? You're single. And we will, your parents can explain that later, but you're single. So what I'd like you to do is turn to 1 Corinthians. There's Bibles at the end of your row. We're going to be looking at page 818. And 1 Corinthians 7, we're going to read 6 through 9, 17 and 24. And the reason why we're jumping out of Ephesians is because this passage in Corinthians and this passage in Ephesians have a lot of overlap. They're both talking about what to do with marriage. But then in Corinthians, Paul also sprinkles in there what to do with being single. Where in Ephesians, he doesn't really address that. There are principles there that we could pull out. But I decided, you know, if we're really going to focus on being single, let's look at, 1 Corinthians. And basically what Paul is writing to, he's writing to a crazy church that has crazy lifestyles. And he's got a lot to correct. He's got a lot to say, whoa. Okay, there's a change that happens here, okay? We're talking about becoming who you are. You are a Christian. You are saved. You are indwelt by the Spirit. It's time to live life a little differently than before. And so in the midst of this this letter, he comes across a situation where there is a situation where widows are wanting to know, well, should we get married? Now, the situation is very complex, but basically they're living in a situation where the Christians are persecuted. You know, if you get married and have kids, that there are people who will come and kill your husband, rape your wife, and put your children in slavery. This is not the best time to start a family. And so Paul's like, look, you know, there might be some other things to consider. And so he's writing into this situation where there are some widows, there are probably lots of single people, and he's responding to how they should view their singleness. And so in chapter 7, starting with verse 6, "Now as a concession, not a command, I say this. I wish that all were as myself, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single, as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. To the married, I give this charge." Oh, we're jumping too far. So now let's jump down to verse 17. So he talks about the married people, and then in verse 17, he says, "Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches." Okay, so you've got singleness and married, but live your life. Which one are you called to? And then in verse 24, "So brothers, in whatever condition each was called, let him remain with God." So here he says, being single is a gift, okay? He says being single is a gift, but he puts a kind of a cap on it. He says, now, if you're burning with passion, if you need another person in your life, and for you to remain single, you're going to have to engage in premarital sex, or you're going to have to lead your heart astray from God. What you need to do is get married. Don't burn with sin. If you're burning with this desire to be with someone else, it's time to get married. You're not called to singleness. But if you're in a place where there's not that longing, there's not that desire, there's not that burning inside you, you might be called for a season, you might be called to singleness. There might be a gift. And so you got to think about what are gifts? You know, we think of gifts as, you know, okay, well, Mike's got the gift of preaching, and Melody Burley has a gift of, you know, hospitality, praying. You know, there's we see different gifts in people. You know, we look at some people and say, well, that person, they are so open with their home. Every time I come over, they're just generous with their time. They're generous with their things. You know, we see other people who say, wow, that person is so smart. That person knows the Bible. Well, it's not just smart, but they really understand, and they can look into situations in life and say, look, here's what the Bible says about this. And so we can see different people. You know, this person is always praying. This person constantly pray. And I feel so uplifted when we have this conversation and I share my burden, and they immediately want to pray for it. And their prayer is real. It's not just a formula. It's not just something that they read through real quick and say, well, you know, I hope you get, you know, a resolution on your situation, and, you know, that it won't be as bad for you tomorrow that is today. You know, but they're, they are on their knees, almost in tears, just pouring their heart into this prayer, praying for God to end your suffering. And so we can see different gifts in different people. And what Paul is saying is the gift of singleness is going to allow you to edify the body. It's going to allow you to help build up the Christian body for a time. If you're called to a seasonal singleness, I probably should have found a better word. That's really hard to say. But if you can find, you know, that how has God put me in this position? What has He given me? And so for a lot of you, you know, we've got we go to mission trips. Look at a lot of people that go on the mission trips. You've got some married people, then you have a lot of singles. We've had a lot of mission trips to Haiti and to Ecuador where people who are not yet married have been able to pick up and go. It is just logistically easier for singles to be able to do that. You know, and some of them maybe, well, I don't have enough money to go. Well, there's a well-established married couple that can't take the time off, can't leave the family, but can provide for the single to go because their time is available. There's no bounds. There's nothing binding them to here. You know, when I woke up yesterday morning, I said, you know, okay, I've had a rough week. I need to really focus on my sermon. I'm going to set the alarm for 6:15. Girls usually wake up 7:30. That give me a good hour and a half to put a little more time into my sermon. And so 6:15, the alarm set. Well, I woke up at 6 o'clock because for some reason my daughter, she knocks on the door. We took the little porta potty thing out of her, like the baby porta potty. We took that out of her room, and so now she has to knock on the door for us to let her out so she can go to the bathroom. But somehow Casey has tricked her into only calling for daddy when it's time to go to the bathroom. So 6 o'clock in the morning, out of the monitor, I just hear daddy, daddy, you know, and so I have to wake up, go, okay, so we go to the bathroom, and she says, where are we going today? And I was like, going, it's 6 o'clock. I was like, well, we're going back to bed. That's where we're going. And she says, no, not tired. And if I put her back in the room, she's going to wake Gabby up. So I said, well, okay, let's go downstairs. And so I spent the next hour and a half, what I originally planned on, you know, doing a little study, doing a little development on the sermon. What I originally planned time for that ended up being, you know, time for watercoloring and painting a mermaid and, you know, fun stuff like that. Stuff that I enjoy, but it takes away. I mean, it takes away from, it limits your schedule. I can't just, you know, stay up till midnight, you know, because I might have a, you know, all the time. I do that sometimes still. I'm young. I haven't learned yet, but I can't stay up late in the night all the time because I have a family. I have a kid that could wake up in the middle of the night. I have a family I have to take care of. I can't just take off every single night and go meet with people out and be out all the time. I have to be back at the home. I have responsibilities and duty at the home. I have to be there and perform my role and responsibility. But also, you know, there's a part of me that's, I look at the single life and I say, you know, I used to be single. It's been a long time. I don't know if you knew that. It's been, Casey and I, probably almost to the date, have been together for 9 years, not married, but we've been together for 9 years. You know, next summer will be our 10-year, I guess, anniversary. But before that, you know, I told you I was single. There's a reason why I was single. It's not because I didn't desire to be with someone, and it's not that I treated singleness as a god or something to be, you know, greatly valued. Although I am independent, the reason why I was single is because I was a huge nerd. It's because that Star Wars thing I was talking about. Like, I have a life-size turn-on, like real deal lightsaber in my basement right now. Like, I have a real lightsaber. I have a stack of cards, okay, that, and this is what I did all through middle school and part of high school. I won't tell you how deep into high school. But I have a stack of cards that allowed me to play a game against someone else. It'd be 60 cards, and I'd play, and I'd deal, and I'd strategize, and how am I going to beat this person? And it was a Star Wars trading card game. And that was my life in high school, okay? So it shouldn't shock anyone that I was single through high school. God gave me a special gift of singleness in high school. And so there's kind of this sense where how am I going to use this as a gift? Well, for me in high school, I was very involved in youth group. You know, I didn't have a lot of girlfriends. I didn't have any. I really didn't. My first date was senior year in the old gym right down the hall outside. That was my first dance as a senior, okay? First dance as a senior. Just didn't date a lot. Wasn't that it wasn't on my radar, but I didn't know how to accomplish this feat of getting a girl. So I was gifted with singleness, and I poured a lot of time into youth ministry. The next year after I graduated from high school, I actually was serving as an intern to that youth group, and I was did a few lessons and a few teaching and helped the youth ministry go on their camps and help facilitate that. And so there was a lot of time that I invested into the youth group and into other people learning and becoming Christians. I played in the band. That's part of the reason why I never practiced, but I'm still decent at the bass is because I spent so much time practicing in high school because I had nothing else to do. And so there was a sense that God had given me singleness. And what we're looking at here is he's saying, look, don't, if you're single, don't let that bother you so much. Start to view that as a gift. Because you might be called to a seasonal time of singleness where you might be called for a time to really begin to invest into other people's lives, invest into the church, invest into other people growing in Christ. It might be a time for you to really study the Bible, learn about it, let it shape you before you get married, before you have more responsibilities, before you have less time to do these things. And Paul is saying it's a gift. It's something that we need to view as something God has given us to use for a specific time. But the culture that we live in, they've got conflicting messages. There's two messages that you're getting from the culture. They kind of conflict. One is saying independence is what you need to strive for. The other is saying interdependence, being in a relationship completely devoted to someone. And so we see two different things coming at us, that singleness is a curse, and singleness is God. We see both of those flowing out of the culture, and they're attacking this idea that, no, singleness is a gift. And we see that in the idol of singleness. One of the idols of singleness is this independence. I'm going to be an independent person. Maybe even some of the feminist movement pushes someone to say, well, no, I need to have my career in order. I need to be this sort of superwoman where I have a full-time career, I have a full-time marriage, I have a full-time mothering responsibilities, and they pile this entire all these responsibilities of really too much for most people to handle, that you're supposed to be the perfect career woman. You're supposed to be the perfect mother. How can you do both of those perfectly? And then you got to be a perfect husband. And so we pile this up on people. We look at some men where it's all about just pushing further and further and further, and we see it all the time where we climb this corporate ladder and we lose touch of our family. We climb this corporate ladder and we lose that connection that we had with our spouse when we were younger. And so this independence model that we are training our young people to, the culture is telling us all the time, be independent, be free from anyone controlling you. And so the culture says, don't miss the opportunities of living for yourself. I remember listening to a radio show where they were talking about this, when is the appropriate time to get married? And most of them came down, well, probably 28 to 30, because when you're, and they threw out the age, 24. When you're 24 and you get married, like you don't know anything about yourself. You don't know what you really want. You know, you don't know enough about life to really be able to gauge. And I'm thinking, sitting there thinking, man, we got married when like 21. So, you know, and it kind of made me, you know, like almost depressed or defensive or something. But I was like, wow, this is unbelievable that, you know, we don't have, you know, I guess the greatest marriage in the world, but you know, we love each other and we've had a great friendship, and you know, we've gone through a lot of life situations together. And 21's too young, really? Is that, you know, that's the message that this radio show was communicating. And I just started to think, if this is the message, that live for yourself while you still can. You know, you got to think about what are the idols? What are the fears and the desires that are coming out of this? And this idol of living for yourself, this independence, being free from anything, we're trying to create an idol of independence to protect us from being controlled. You know, we don't want to be controlled by anyone. I need this idol. I need something out there that's going to protect me from being controlled. I can't fully invest myself into a relationship with a woman. Even when I'm of age, I'm starting to get into the workforce, and I can provide for a family. I have this desire to be with a woman, but I don't want to have the shackles, right? I don't want to have the ball and chain, right? And that's the message that comes out of this culture. And so we're trying to protect ourselves from being controlled. We're trying to find an idol that grants us some freedom. And when we adopt this into Christianity, the truth is that this idol doesn't fit the model that Jesus has given us. Okay? Jesus gave us a model of what it looks like to live as a single person, but he did not give us a model of living as a single person in order to avoid being controlled. He didn't live a single life in order to grab freedom. Okay, he wasn't desiring freedom. He wasn't fearing being controlled. If you read through the Gospel of John, you see all the time that he is submitting to the Father. Not my will, but yours. That's why he went to the cross. You want to talk about being shackled and being chained to something and actually having responsibility. He lived a single life, but he lived a single life subjected to God, even to the point of the cross. And so when we look at Jesus and we say, okay, I've got this idol. My idol is being independent. I want to be free from anything. I want to not be controlled by anyone. We try to replace that with something. We try to say, well, freedom is me being able to have sex with a woman, but not a relationship with her, not the ties that bind me to her, and I have to make financial decisions in light of her. You know, I want to have my sports car, but I want to have sex with a woman too. You know, I want to have all three video game systems in my basement so I can plant my butt down there every night and play 4 to 5 hours of video games a night. Like, I want that. Like literally, I want that. The sports car, not so much, but the video games, I want that. And you know, we just got this. There's this huge TV that my parents were getting rid of because there was in an office. We had to move. It was an old. It's like 6 years old. They had a new one, and we left this in our office. Well, my work had to move offices, and in the move, we lost some space to store this TV. So my dad's like, well, you know, whoever wants it, I'll take it. That's a big TV. I will take it. And I thought it'd be really funny to not tell Casey. And so I took that TV and I cleared out my dresser right in front of the bed, and boom, okay, we're talking 60 inches, nothing you can see. You can't see the wall anymore, okay? It's TV in the bedroom. And I did this as a joke. I'm still convincing her it was done as a joke. But the TV is going to get moved, but it was very funny to see, you know, we put the kids to bed and she got home late, so get home, put the kids to bed, open the door, turn a light on, and just freeze. Like, what is in my house? I think she said it even like it scared her at first, because she didn't know what was in front of her, and it looked ridiculous in our bedroom. But there is a sense of me that, like, even as a married person, you know, we're talking to singles here, but this affects us as married people. The idols of our singleness come to bear in our married life. They come to bear in our marriages, and so as I lived a life where I liked some of the benefits of being single. I enjoyed some of the perks of being single that I could. You know, when we first started dating, she should have known what she got herself into. I tried to show her all of my flaws. When she first met me, I was wearing like black jeans with a brown belt and these brown Doc Martens, and she would just look at me, and I'd wear whatever Christian t-shirt I had on the day. It was probably too small. My pants are way too big. I bought pants that look like they're crossed between cargo pants and parachute pants, if that's, you know, if some of you know what that is. You know, so if I ever wanted to pack up a lot of stuff and carry stuff like a pack mule, but still be able to do my MC Hammer moves, I was set, right? I had these pants. And the reason why they were parachute pants is they're just too big. I had no idea how to dress myself, okay? It just wasn't on my radar, and then so I needed to not be single. So Casey meets me, and she sees this, you know, like, obviously I enjoy my singleness way too much if I'm dressing like this. And there was one time where she went to work. I woke up, played video games. She came over to visit, and I kept playing while she was there. And she said, well, I'm going to go to class, because she had a summer class, and I was still, you know, I was off for that summer. And so she went to her class and came back, and I was still playing video games. I played all day, 12 hours in a row, and that was just something that I had the freedom to do as a single guy. And obviously, I enjoyed that aspect of singleness a little too much. And what has happened is that desire that I fostered, that routine, that pattern that I fostered as a young single dude affects my marriage. Now there's still a desire. Like, there's a desire to come home and immediately play video games instead of sit down with my kids. There's a desire for me whenever I get stressed out, whenever things aren't going right, I want to zone out from life and play video games. You can't do that when you're married. Okay? You can't take a time out from life when you're married. There's too much responsibility. There's too much relationship. You've got kids, you've got a wife, you've got responsibility, and you can't just time out from life. You can do that as a teenager. You can do that when you're single. But be careful about that. Be careful about developing that sense of independence, creating that idol of independence, because that will take you away from God, but also have ramifications in your marriage. The other idol that we see that comes out from the culture is this idea of interdependence, where we desire to have this connection with someone. You know, at first, this almost seems like the right way. You know, we've been talking about men and women coming together, but this can be an idol. This can be an idol, and you see this a lot more in women, traditionally in women, but it's, you know, the roles might be getting reversed here as the culture progresses, but typically this has been a traditional woman side of things, where the independence has been more of the man side of things. But a lot of times what you'll see is what the you know, really good feminist writers will accurately describe as the princess syndrome. And this interdependence, this idea that I need to have someone else to make me whole. You know, and I've seen a lot of Disney princess movies in the last 2 years. And I can tell you, there is a difference between Snow White and Belle from Beauty and the Beast and from Rapunzel from Tangled. There is a difference in their attitudes and the way they carry themselves as they reflect the culture that they were written, as they reflect the culture they were made in. There is a difference, but in all of these movies, there's still this idea that I need a prince to come along, especially in Snow White. You look at those older movies, it is unbelievable. Like Snow White is completely helpless, completely off-putting for today's culture, because we look at this woman who can really do nothing but scream at whatever misfortune is happening. And it's a good thing she can sing, because I don't know about this fairest in the land. She looks kind of homely to me. But she sings really well. That's good. Okay, so she's got that going for her. But she needs a man. She needs a man to be complete. She's incomplete without a man. That's what you see in this story. And really, it's been all through all these Disney princess movies. Even the women that are strong, there's still sort of this need, sort of this idea that a prince needs to come along to make things right. And it's called the princess syndrome. And so we can see that this idol of interdependence is trying to protect us from loneliness, because we fear being alone. We fear growing up. That friend I was talking about, there was this burden, this fear of being alone, where I was like, dude, you can go home and play video games. You know, is it just so there are different different idols that we have, but for some of us, it is the fear of being alone. I need an idol that will that I can run to, that I can cling to in order to give me this interdependence, to give me this connection. And so a lot of times what we'll do is we will invest all of our energy. For young girls, they'll invest all of their energy into this one boy. In high school, like the percentage of you even knowing this person 5 years from now is 3%, okay? When you're in high school, like I there might be one, and I got to think about it, there might be one person I know from high school. I went to a high school that was like 300 people. And there's like one person I know from high school. The percentage of you maintaining a relationship, there's only one or two people I know from college. It's so hard to keep that relationship. But yet we see this in young girls that they will devote and pour their entire self into a boy who, by the way, is an absolute idiot at this point in time. No offense. I was an idiot too. But when you're 16, you're just, you know, that's just how it is. And when we see these girls, they'll be like, this is the greatest guy ever, right? This guy can do so much. Like, you know, he shoots a basketball. You know, like that's a valued skill. And so we see them just devote their lives. But here's what's happening is you are creating this idol of, I need to have another person to complete me. I can't be complete by myself. I can't be complete in my time of singleness before marriage. I'm not okay with being alone. I'm not okay with not having that connection. And so they dump themselves into these people. And so we're trying to protect ourselves from loneliness when we do this. We try to protect ourselves from filling this empty void, this empty gap that is there. And then we're also trying to maybe we desire acceptance. Maybe we desire connectivity. Maybe we desire just something that will fulfill us and make us feel like we are a part of something, that we are whole. We're not alone. You know, that's kind of the idol that we're creating, and we will make that idol a boy, or sometimes we'll make that idol a girl, where we are not okay with being alone. That's really how the movie No Strings Attached starts. Is Ashton Kutcher, his character, is recently broken up, and he has this hole in his life that he's trying to fill. And he's trying to find some connection with a girl. It actually shows him going through his phone list and calling every single girl just to see if they'll spend the night with him. Because he has this hole in his life that he has to connect with something. He has to, and when we look at Jesus and the way he lived his single life, this idol does not fit the model that Jesus has given us. You know, Jesus felt lonely, but didn't turn to a woman, didn't turn to sex, didn't turn to something to grab at a connection. He turned to God. And you know he felt lonely when he was betrayed by one of his closest friends. Okay, you got the whole Judas Iscariot, where Judas sells him out, one of his 12 disciples, one of his the people that he entrusted his life with, and the people that he developed for 3 years and taught and trained, and this guy sells him out and totally betrays him. And there was brokenness that Jesus felt. You know, when we look to Jesus, we don't have to say, you know, we struggle with this, but Jesus never did. He was God, right? Jesus was God. He didn't have to struggle with this. But that's not the story the Bible paints. The story paints Jesus as God, but also as fully human, as fully experiencing the range of these fears and desires, fully experiencing the temptation to give in to this pressure, to give in to the pressure of wanting to be independent and not chained by anybody. But yet he had to follow certain customary things. He had to follow certain procedures. He had to follow God, who was telling him to go to the cross and die. And then we see him experiencing loneliness. I mean, one of the loneliest positions that you can have in this world is a pastor. I'm not saying Mike's depressed or anything, but one of the loneliest positions is being a leader of a group of people. Because as you devote your time and energy into a group of people and you train them and teach them, you have this vision of where things should be. And a lot of times when you're in that position of having vision and trying to cast vision for people, you end up feeling like no one else gets it. Like, I've got this vision, I've got this clear direction, but I do these people really catch the vision? Am I the only one here with this vision? And then, and so you've got to think Jesus, as he's cast this vision out to, I mean, if you've read the Gospels, the disciples, they don't have a clue what he's talking about half the time. They're just kind of falling along. And he's always like, don't you get it yet? Haven't I shown you enough to really understand who I am and to really understand what I'm telling you? And so we experience that fear of being alone, that insecurity. I mean, he would have been tempted with that and to run with something. So Jesus knows these struggles, but yet we see him conquer them. We see him conquer them by turning to God. And so Jesus conquers these idols, but he also can surpass these idols. I don't know if it does us a lot of good just to say, Jesus was better at us than this. I don't know if that helps anybody out. But what Jesus does do is he comes, he conquers these idols, he lives a perfect life. He doesn't say, he lives a life where there's insecurity about these issues, there's fears about these issues, but he doesn't succumb to these idols. He doesn't build up an idol of independence, or he doesn't build up an idol of interdependence, but he lives for God. He uses his singleness to do what God's will is. And so I don't know if it's just enough for us to say that, but what he does beyond that is he surpasses it. He surpasses the power. You know, we want to look at independence. You know, I desperately have tried to fill a void of being free from everything, no control, no nothing, by sitting in front of a TV 12 hours a day. Now, if there's nothing that is exemplary of control, okay, it's called a controller. Okay, who's controlling who, right? Is it the TV controlling you, or are you controlling Mario? I think it's Mario. I think it's Mario controlling you. That's a different sermon. But there's a new movie coming out. Have you seen the previews for? You check it out. It's going to come out in about a year. There's a movie that's really playing on the idea of advertising. You all seen those iPhone scan bars? They're a big box. They look kind of weird, and you scan it with your iPhone. It takes you to a site. It's kind of playing on this idea that there's advertisement everywhere, and it's kind of a sci-fi thing where there's sort of this alien creature that will attach to you and sort of implant thoughts into you. It's the next step of marketing, is to control the audience, is to send this sort of secret bug that implants in them and tells them, oh, I'd like a Coke right now. Oh, I'd like to have Burger King right now. I don't recommend that one. Or I'd like to have Hardee's or something. You know, but what I would say is, there are times where we think we're free. We think we've broken all the shackles off us, and all we've done is just exchange them. I've exchanged being shackled to a family to being shackled to my own sin and my own depravity. And I'm chaining myself to entertainment. I constantly have to have entertainment. I will go through withdrawals. I mean, have you ever tried to like go out into the woods and put all your electronics away for 3 days? For some of you, that's not a big deal. Because you're used to that. But for some of you who have never done that, try it. Try just putting your phone down. Try losing your phone. Have you ever felt that for like a brief second when you lose your phone? Like you feel like your world is slipping away. Like you've lost connectivity to everything. When the internet goes out in our house, like I don't know what to do. Like I lose perception of everything that's going on. I don't know what's happening next. I need some sort of that. I need that connectivity. I need that constant feed of information. And then within interdependence, you know, we think being bound to someone or being connected to someone is going to satisfy us. You know, we think being free from something, that we're not free from anything. You're chained to yourself. We think we're connected to someone. You're not connected to what's real. You're connected to a facade. You're connected to who you've built this boy up to be, or who you've built this girl up to be, but it doesn't satisfy. And so Jesus steps in and he says, you can live your single life because I lived it, but not only did I live it, I am providing something for you you can't get anywhere else. I'm providing real freedom. Okay, you are saved and freed from your sins. I'm providing a real source of freedom that through me and through the Spirit working in you, you can now fight the chains that have bound you to sin. You can now fight the desire because you don't need to play 12 hours of video games a day. You know, you don't need to pursue accomplishments and have that be the defining work of your life because I love you as your creator. He is there for us to break those bonds. He's there for us to to run to it in a relationship. That so we don't need a girl or a boy to fill that hole in our life. We have someone who has created us that loves us. I mean, being married is great. I love being married. I'm built for marriage, not just out of a desperation need. I've explained that. The reason why I look today the way I look is because I'm married. If I wasn't married, I wouldn't look this normal. And so I love being married. I love the benefits of being married. I love having a family. You know, I was not that brokenhearted when I had to spend time with my three-year-old daughter. Wasn't that brokenhearted about it. Oh, yeah, we're going to do these things, weren't we? Did we do the first one? Did I just blow by it? Okay, well, this is basically a picture of the idol I was talking about. I'll explain this real quick, I guess. This is basically the picture of the idol I was talking about. Game over. You kind of play on the video game thing there. He's very unhappy. He's losing his independence. This is a real idol in our culture. Now, the next idol is a little different. The interdependence, the picture I have for that is kind of funny. This is James Vanderbeek, probably from the Dawson's Creek, I think. Girls' night out, can't I come? No, stop crying, James, grow up. So there are real idols. I mean, we see this all the time. There are shows and movies that show us this, that show us that they're telling us you have to have someone to be complete, or they're saying hey, free the shackles. Usually it's divided between male and female, but whatever your idol that you've run to in the past, Jesus has conquered that idol, and Jesus is greater than that idol. He provides something that is greater than we can experience. He will give us a sense of belonging, and he will give us a sense of freedom at the same time. And so my what I would say is though I love being married, and that is a great pursuit, it is what generally God has created man to be. It's not good for man to be alone. Man was created. He wants man to join woman, become one, be fruitful and multiply, have a family. While those things are great, don't lose fact of the sight that this small window, this seasonal opportunity of being single has great potential for you to live for God. Has great potential for you to do things that you won't ever be able to do again. Right before I met Casey, I got to go to Indonesia on a mission trip. I haven't been on an international mission trip since then, partly because we couldn't afford it. But secondly, you're having kids every year. It's hard, or every other year. Probably going to space the next one out about every 3 to 4 years. It's hard pace to keep. But you start having these kids and you have family, it makes it difficult to go on that. And so use your singleness. Dudes, young dudes, use your singleness. Young ladies, don't. You're going to be going to college soon. You've got a brief window. It feels so long. It feels so burdensome. Don't lose sight that this is a window. This is a seasonal singleness call for you to live for God, for you to invest in the church, for you to invest in other people's lives to bring them to Christ. So try to think about your singleness and how God would want you to use that. And the band's going to come out and I want us to pray and just you know, thank God for giving us different gifts. You know, this church would not work if we were all married couples. Okay? I don't know if you realize this, but the singles, the youth, they make childcare work. Okay? Childcare does not work without the youth in this church. Childcare does not work without the singles. We have two adults go back there, and then we have usually two youth go back there. And that's what is needed. If it was just adults, you'd either have two adults working every 6 weeks and being completely strung out by just the craziness that's going on and having no one to help them and no one to help corral these kids, or you would have two adults working every 3 weeks. And then all the people with kids would never be in here. So think about how can I use my singleness? Pray with me. Jesus, we thank you for gifting us, for gifting us with a time of singleness. I pray that we would not abuse your gift, that we would not begin to create these idols for these young people, that they would start to see where their hearts are led astray, where they tend to run to and value, but that they would see this time as an opportunity to love you and this time as an opportunity to serve you. And Lord, I pray that for us who are married, that we would look on our singleness, look in the past and look at the idols that maybe we created and that we've imported over into our marriage. And that we would start to see singleness and marriage and the life that you have given us as a gift from you to be served and to serve you and an opportunity to serve you. And I pray that you would bless us this day as we worship your name. In Jesus' name, amen.